Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is a Monday, April 5th, 2021. And we're grateful, as always, to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. And these tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And that's a tool I've been using for over 16 years to improve the quality of my life and relationships and to turn any negative emotion into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us is gifted at birth. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. You can download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process or asked clarifying questions about it. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains that worksheet process, an abbreviated version of that process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, and then give us a call at 563-999-3581. And let us know what would be of most support to you. If you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a discussion. And we appreciate when people do that. It makes it easier for us to live into our intention to be of service with this work. We've also agreed in this year to work through the Course in Miracles workbook lessons. And today is the 95th day of the year, and the lesson for today is, I am one self, capital S, self, united with my Creator. And as anybody who's reading along with this knows, these commentaries get longer and longer as we move into the year. The commentary today says, today's idea accurately describes you as the Creator created you. You are one within yourself and one with him or her, your Creator. Yours is the unity of all creation. Your perfect unity makes change and in you impossible. So the way you were created as your Creator created you is changeless. The external package, Michael Rice calls it the plastic energy that you see as your body, These things will always be changing, and yet your essence is unchanged, unchangeable forever. You do not accept this, and you fail to realize it, that it must be so, only because you believe that you have changed yourself already. You see yourself as a ridiculous parody on God's work. Weak, vicious, ugly, and sinful, miserable and beset with pain. Such is your version of yourself, a self divided into many warring parts separate from God and tenuously held together by its erratic and capricious maker to which you pray. It does not hear your prayers, for it is deaf. It does not see the oneness in you, for it is blind. It does not understand you are the son of creation, for it's senseless and it understands nothing. That's what yourself is, your version of yourself, understands nothing and is senseless. We will attempt today to be aware only of what can hear and see and what does make perfect sense. We will again direct our exercises toward reaching your awareness of your one true self, which is united with its creator. In patience and in hope, we try again today. The use of the first 5 minutes of every waking hour for practicing the idea for the day has special advantages at the stage of learning in which you are present. It is difficult at this point not to allow your mind to wander if it undertakes extended practice. We have surely realized this by now. You have seen the extent of your lack of mental discipline and your need for mind training. It's necessary that you be aware of this, for it is indeed a hindrance to your advance. Frequent but shorter practice periods have other advantages for you at this time. In addition to recognizing your difficulties with sustained attention, you must also have noticed that, unless you are reminded of your purpose frequently, you tend to forget about it for long periods of time. You often fail to remember the short applications of the idea for today, and you have not yet formed the habit of using the idea as an automatic response to temptation. Structure, then, is necessary for you at this time. Planned to include frequent reminders of your goal and regular attempts to reach it, regularity in terms of time is not the ideal requirement for the most beneficial form of practice in salvation. It is advantageous, however, for those whose motivation is inconsistent and who remain heavily defended against learning. That would be most of us. We will therefore keep to the 5 minutes an hour practice periods for a while and urge you to omit as few as possible. Using the first 5 minutes of the hour will be particularly helpful since it imposes firmer structure. Do not, however, use your lapses from this schedule as an excuse not to return to it again as soon as you can. There may well be a temptation to regard the day as lost because you've already failed to do what is required. This should, however, merely be recognized as what it is, a refusal to let your mistake be corrected and an unwillingness to try again. The Holy Spirit is not delayed in his teaching by your mistakes. He can be held back only by your unwillingness to let them go. Let us therefore be determined, particularly for the next week or so, to be willing to forgive ourselves for our lapses in indulgence and our pardon and our failures to follow the instructions for practicing today's idea. We will pardon ourselves for these lapses in indulgence and failures to follow the instructions for practicing today's idea. This tolerance for weakness will enable us to overlook it rather than give it power to delay our learning. If we give it power to do this, we're regarding it as strength, and we are therefore confusing strength and weakness. To my mind, this is all about how often I say to people, please be gentle with yourself, because every negative thought I pour energy into regarding myself is simply self-sabotage. There is no benefit to me thinking of what a jerk or idiot or how stupid I am for this, that, or the other thing, even if I recognize that what I did is not what I wanted to do or I would choose to do from my higher self. It's just an action in the past, and unless I give it the power to create my next choice, it's powerless. Goes on to say, when you fail to comply with the requirements of this course, you have merely made a mistake. This calls for correction and nothing else. And by the nothing else here, I would throw in, it does not call for self-berating or self-loathing thoughts. It is simply a mistake. It calls for correction and nothing else. To allow a mistake to continue is to make additional mistakes based on the first and then reinforcing it. It is this process that must be laid aside, for it is but another way in which you would defend illusions against the truth. Let all these errors go by recognizing them for what they are. Begin the practice period today with this assurance. I am one self united with my Creator, at one with every aspect of creation and limitless in power and peace. Then close your eyes and tell yourself again slowly and thoughtfully, attempting to allow the meaning of the words to sink in. I am one self. Repeat this several times, and then attempt to feel the meaning that these words convey. You are one self, united and secure in light and joy and peace. You are one self, in perfect harmony with all there is and all there will be. Do not forget today, we need your help, your little part in bringing happiness to all the world. And heaven looks to you in confidence that you will try today. Your own acknowledgement, you are one self, united with the Father, is a call to all the world to be at one with you. To everyone you meet today, be sure to give the promise of today's idea and tell him or her this. You are one self with me, united with our Creator in this self. I honor you because of what I am and what our Creator is, and the love that is both of us as one. So that's the lesson from the Course in Miracles workbook, abridged so that we could get through it in somewhat of a timely fashion. And here is the lesson from Pam Grout's book, A Course in Miracles Experiment, for today. Her 95th chapter is titled, Ditch the Commandments, Join the Party. She quotes Oprah Winfrey as saying, every day brings a chance for you to draw in a breath, kick off your shoes, and dance. Pam writes, more than 15 million people in more than 180 countries Zumba every week. Why? Because it's fun and it's easy. The ultimate goal of any Zumba class is to feel what creator Beto Perez calls the FEJ, freeing, electrifying joy. That's what happens when you dance uninhibited to hip-hop, samba, salsa, merengue, and mambo. You may be wondering what Zumba has to do with Lesson 95. I am one self, united with my Creator. Zumba went from an obscure dance class in Cali, Colombia, to worldwide phenomenon for one simple reason. A marketing genius transformed it from have to, I've got to exercise, into I cannot wait to. Perez insisted it had to be something his mother could do. In other words, simple. And it had to be enjoyable enough to reap true behavioral change. Unlike Zumba, God has a major PR problem. It's the last place most people would turn to find freeing and electrifying joy. Church, crucifixes, penance, I mean, who needs it? So I propose a new way of looking at God. Not only have I updated its name, but I tell anybody who will listen that the real God, not the God invented by man, the God fabricated for the sake of control, but the real God is the coolest, the most fun, the most direct path to FEJ I've ever found. Freeing, electrifying joy I've ever found. Or to quote Beto once again, magic happens when your inhibitions go out the window, or when your old-school beliefs go out the window. And if you happen to get lost, just shake your booty. 5 minutes a day, every hour. So that's our lesson from the workbook and our conversation, or our reading from the Course in Miracles experiment by Pam Grout. And we have 43 minutes left for conversation. How can we support you? 563-999-3581 and press 1. Here's hoping that everyone had a healthy, happy, fun weekend. For a lot of people, this was a time to celebrate Easter. And for some people, that means some kind of a religious exercise. And for others, it means bunnies and eggs. I don't know how those two are connected. And chocolate and various candies. Lots and lots of sugar. Although, I do remember doing some research a few years ago about the connection and the idea about hiding eggs and finding them and creating it. It has all kinds of interesting connections in history, sending kids out to find mushrooms in the forest. So however you spent your weekend, we'd be happy to hear about it and or support you in any way to apply these tools in your life or clarify what or how these tools are. I had very few connections with the past this past weekend, but I was also strongly reminded of all of the ways that so many of us are trained to think that we're different from anybody else. We're either better than or worse than anybody else. And I would just call us all to remember that every time you have a thought about how you're better than or worse than another person, that there's the opportunity in that moment to do what Michael Rice would call practice the ancient Aramaic tool of forgiveness and to dismantle the false belief, because as the lesson for today from the Course in Miracles points out, we cannot be separated from our Creator and everything that our Creator has created. We are in this together. And we all have our own little individual strengths and weaknesses at some level of scale, and yet we are all far more similar than dissimilar in any possible way. So if you have an upset at any level that arises when you think about yourself, comparing yourself to another person, that's the perfect target in that moment for a reality management worksheet. Because as we point out in the 10 bottom line observations, I will never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. So if I think that's ridiculous, that person shouldn't be doing this or that, or how could they, how dare they, whatever it is, if I have a negative thought about myself or somebody else or a negative emotion, I can instantly know three things. The first one is it's a falsehood or based in a lie. The second thing is it's not about what's going on in the moment in front of me. This is an old tape playing. If I have an anger or a fear or a sadness or a frustration or a hurt emotionally, it's not about what's happening in the moment. The second thing I can know is that it's a lie. And the third thing I can know is if I take an action or make a statement based on that negative thought or emotion, I'm just going to make my current situation worse. It is not possible for me to improve my situation by pouring negative emotional energy into it. It just can't happen. So, if you apply that awareness to your own mind energy, to your reactions to life, to your interactions with family on a holiday weekend, and realize that every little irritation and every little frustration that you've experienced during the past week or day is the result of you judging yourself negatively and not having dismantled it. It's not about the other person, and it's not about who's right or who's wrong, and it's not about what's going on in the moment. It's about the past, and the past in terms of thoughts and beliefs and emotions and traumatic energies that each of us brings into each present moment. And if we are aware of that and we decide to use that as our guidance system rather than as a way to beat ourselves or somebody else up, then we are armed with some of the most powerful and effective tools for improving the quality of our lives. And that's what we're here to support people in doing. 563-999-3581. We have nobody in the chat room, but we have 8 or 9 callers on the board. What's your comment? What's your question? How can we support you today? What's a question you have about any topic that's come up in the past 10 years of Mindshifter Radio 5 days a week? What's a topic that you would like to have us explore, and or a book you'd like to have us read, or an author you'd like to have us interview? I have the task of coming up with more and more people to interview for the Journey's Dream and or the Mindshifters radio, the podcast that you're on now. And I've gotten permission to share the podcast interview from Laura McGowan, so that'll be an upcoming show when I can't be here live. The recording of the interview with Laura McGowan, and we're looking for other suggestions. What books have you read? What authors have you heard about from others? What motivational or spiritual teachers are resonating deeply with you? Give us a call and make that suggestion, or send me an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and let us know your suggestion. Area code 813, you're in the air. Who do we have?
He's hiding from someone up, what it is.
Area code 813, you're in the air.
Oh, that's interesting.
Apparently, it was an inadvertent raising of the hand for area code 813. So I've muted the microphone, and we have 35 minutes left to handle your comments or your questions and or suggest a topic for today. How can we support you? I was reviewing, reading, listening more to the book Untamed by Glennon Doyle over the weekend. And I highly recommend that book kind of in tandem with the book We Are the Luckiest. So if anybody out there has any insider track information about how to get direct contact with Glennon Doyle, that would be appreciated. She's not a very public person. But that'd be a person that would, I would enjoy interviewing her. She's got some really, I think, accurate and powerful insights about lots and lots of aspects of life. And I enjoy her writing style, and I also agree with many of the insights she has about how we can extract ourselves from the taming or the cultural conditioning that is done to us. The title of the book is Untamed. And she uses the example of going to a zoo and they have a cheetah that was born in captivity and that is raised with a, I don't know, Labrador retriever or whatever. And so the cheetah, you know, basically tries to do whatever the dog does, and the dog is trained to chase after a rabbit, and, you know, a stuffed rabbit, a fake rabbit. And then the cheetah does it too, and that puts on a show for the crowds. And she talks about how disruptive it was for her mentally and emotionally to watch that animal that has such potential in the wild to be domesticated and used for the bemusement of crowds. So anyway, we are conditioned out of awareness of our true self, and that's exactly what today's lesson is about. You know, today's lesson from the workbook talks about I am one self, and it uses the capital S for self. I am one self with my creator. Well, how many of you were trained within your family, within your culture, within the language to believe that you are a part of an inseparable part of the mind energy, the intelligence, the power that created the universe? I don't see any hands going up, so apparently you're all like the rest of us. You were not raised to think that you were an inseparable part of creation and all that created it. Is this Ellen?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Hello, Ellen.
Yeah, I just wanted to, well, I had a, I guess some comments and a question related to today's lesson. And I, you know, I'm in the part two in Byron Katie's book, A Thousand Names for Joy, where she talks about that, you know, we are not the doers. And, you know, this is not the first time that I've heard this from someone and often thought about, okay, so, and actually, I don't know if you've heard about the experiment that they've done where they've hooked people's brains up and were able to see that prior to someone making a decision, let's say to move their hand, that there's the impulse is coming from the brain to actually move the hand. So between the time that the impulse fires from the brain and the hand moves, the person decides they're going to move their hand. Well, they think they decide they're going to move their hand, I should say. So it's like the mind jumps in and claims ownership of something that it really isn't doing. Or I don't know if that's the way to put it. But at any rate, so, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and I thought, well, if I'm not the doer, then who is the doer? And I've only really come up with two possibilities, which is either my conditioning, my programming is causing the doing, or it's my creator, God. And, but then when I think about, well, so is it, seems like it's my job to catch when it's the conditioning and dismantle that so that I can just always be moved by God. But then I wonder, well, where did the conditioning come from in the first place? Is it just from the belief in separation? So, but then I think, because if everything came from God, well, did that come from God too? So I guess I would just like your input on these thoughts that I've been having.
Well, you know, often when people ask questions like that, I say, okay, so if we did have God here and she could answer us directly and tell us the perfect answer to your question, how would that change the way you'd live your life in the next day? If you figured out how we got, how the conditioning got started, or then what would that perfect answer, what difference would it make in your life today or tomorrow?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, so if you don't know what benefit would come from it or how you would live your life differently, then let's let that question go. Save that for your
okay.
next vacation where it doesn't matter if you waste your time. Let's
okay.
instead take a situation where you're not feeling connected to your source, you're not feeling the love, the compassion, the joy, the productivity, the creativity, the aliveness, and let's apply a tool directly to the thoughts you're using in that moment to block your awareness of your true self, that capital S self that's being referred to in the lesson for today. Because I don't have any answers to how did all of this begin, and why is the conditioning, and if it's all part of God, then how could, I don't know. I don't know. I probably know less than you because you're a pretty smart person and you've been studying this stuff for a long time. I do, however,
well.
Know that when I apply the tools, I enjoy the positive results, even if I can't understand how the tools work. So I don't have any good answers to that question. How did this all get started? How did the conditioning get started? Who's doing it? Is it God doing it to us, et cetera? I could direct you to a book like The Impersonal Self by Joseph S. Benner.
Ooh, I have that.
Sitting
on my nightstand.
There are some intimations in there for at least how this distracts us from allowing ourselves to be lived, rather than questions like that are a distraction rather than the connection to what is, than allowing ourselves. You know, at one part in there, I remember we were doing quite a bit of reading in that book for a while on our Thursday support group, and I remember at one point it was talking about how what most human beings don't understand is that there is no such thing as true thought until first there is the recognition of the divine. So we think that we're going to be thinking and we're going to come up with answers and we're going to, but the truth is, until we have first the recognition that we are being lived, that it's not us doing the living, doing the thinking, until that happens, there's no real thought. There's no true thought. It's just that what Guy Finley would call the mechanical level of mind churning away at its, you know, do you remember the old things about if you had put, you know, monkeys in front of a keyboard and had them type randomly for forever and infinite number, you would end up getting every book ever written, the Bible and everything else, right? But it wouldn't have any meaning because it's just this random compilation of letters to the monkeys. But they'd eventually mm-hmm. get it, right? If everything is random. But if we think we're the ones doing the thinking and that our conclusions are so valuable, then we block ourselves from allowing ourselves to be taught by what Joseph S. Benner is talking about in that whole book, which is the divine, that higher level of consciousness and awareness and intelligence.
So what you're saying is that me thinking about these things is really a distraction.
Yes.
From that. Okay. That's,
yes.
That, thank you for that insight. That's valuable.
Yeah, and that's what we do. We come up with an endless number of distractions from just doing our work, just either. And what's my work? Well, at one level, my work is to just enjoy life, just to be a part of creation that understands its part creator and created, right? I'm not the creator in the ultimate sense, and yet I've been gifted with this ability to generate mind energy or direct the mind energy, and so that contains a creative capacity. And then I can sit back and enjoy that, and I can revel in the miracle of life that's expressing in, through, as, and around me.
Mm-hmm.
But if I get myself all wrought up thinking about, you know, what's the real reason this is happening and what are the true answers to these questions, I'm creating, as you just said, either the distraction to or the actual blockage from the lived experience.
Mm.
And that's a big part of what, you know, I was hearing in the lesson for today is that, you know, it says at one point, you see yourself as, now it says, you know, this, a ridiculous parody on God's creation, but you see yourself as weak, vicious, ugly, and sinful, miserable, and beset with pain. So this is your vision of yourself. It's a self that's divided into many warring parts, but it's a self that's separate from your creator, but that sense of yourself has no understanding, no true understanding. It does not see that you're connected to all of creation and that that created you. It does not understand that you are an offspring of the Creator, and it does not understand because it is senseless and understands nothing. Well, the part of your mind that's asking, well, where did this all begin? Is the part that thinks it knows. And if you
well,
go back to
I wouldn't
these,
say that. I wouldn't be questioning if
well, all right, then say it this way. It's the part of you that thinks it can know.
Right. Yeah.
And there is no part of you at that level in that conscious, logical, rational, intellectual mind that can know. It can't know. And so this is why so many of the great Eastern traditions say, you know, he who says he knows doesn't know. He who says
right. and
he
Byron,
doesn't know,
Byron Katie,
she's on to something.
Yeah, and Byron Katie says, there's nothing better than the I don't know mind.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And yet, when you ask that question, but where did this start from? What? That's the I want to know mind. That's
yes,
not
exactly.
The I don't know mind. Right? When I'm asking questions at that level, it's not because I'm relaxing into not knowing. It's because of my conditioning that wants me to figure it out. And I will never figure it out. That part of my mind isn't capable of comprehending creation and
mm-hmm.
the impersonal life. It's that part of my mind that I need to surrender so that I can have an experience that goes beyond what my senses would present and what my conscious logical mind would generate based on all of the feedback it's gotten over the decades from my senses. This is why, you know, Rilke says things like, we must learn to live in the question. And Rilke goes on to say that, you know, in the moment that you ask a question, the mind that asks a really good question is incapable of comprehending the answer. If it had the perfect answer, it wouldn't be able to understand it. It would sound like gibberish or spoken in a different language. But he says, if we can learn to live in that questioning state, the I don't know mind, the can't know mind, we might live along someday into an answer because we have experience that is the teacher, not words that are the teacher, not thoughts that are the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I've had the experience of seeing myself. I guess I'm just going to put it as I am, as completely whole and complete. And it was the most freeing experience I've ever had, and it put me into a state of total joy. And then I seemed to gradually lose it over time. And I don't know why, but I kind of figured that it's probably because I haven't dismantled all of the false beliefs, all of my conditioning that pretty much had been running my life, and that work needed to get done before I could go into an uninterrupted state of being as I am. But I don't really know.
Okay, and none of us do, right? And it what we have experienced, what most of us have experienced, is that when we have a moment like that, or a day or a week or whatever it is, and then it goes away, if we try to get it back, we're just literally pushing it further away.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we're living in the frustration. We're saying, oh, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. I'm supposed to be able to be back where I was, rather than
exactly.
Just understanding, hey, what I have today, what this moment is my life. This is the gift.
It's exactly what I need. I always keep coming back to that because that helps me to accept everything that comes my way, no matter how much, you know, my ego wants to judge it. If I know that everything that comes my way is exactly what I need, that really helps me. Because then I can be grateful for no matter what it is. I can actually turn my grievance into gratitude, which I love that.
Which is what the Course, that's right. That's what the Course is trying to teach us to do.
Mm-hmm.
To recognize that every grievance we have is an attack on the creation.
Yes.
It's arguing with a mind. It's like the two-year-old who wants to argue with the loving grandparent. That's in scale, but I mean, anything that I do to complain or say whatever is happening in my life shouldn't be happening is as ridiculous as a finicky two-year-old trying to argue with the loving grandparent who knows what's best for the child in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any, you know, I don't have any pretense that says I will always figure out why it was good for this or that to happen, because that, again, would be my conscious logical mind trying to comprehend things that are way beyond its capacity. And
right.
Yet I know that the more I approach my life with that filter of acceptance, the better my life gets. The more I approach my life without trying to figure out why this was good that this happened, and just look for ways to turn my present experience to the good, the better my life gets. The way Guy Finley says it is, all good things come to those for whom the good is all things.
Yeah. Pretty obvious, huh?
he can turn a phrase, right? But if I take the approach that Byron Katie would offer and so many of these other great spiritual teachers would offer, I'll eventually live into things that are far better than I could have imagined. But that comes by accepting that whatever is good in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
We had on Thursday night, we listened to a little piece from Ganga Ji, and she was in that little, however, 11 or 14 minute segment of a talk. I think it's 14 and a half minutes of a talk. She was reviewing how when she first went to her teacher, Papaji, and he said, just stop. And she said, okay, I'll breathe, I'll relax, I'll do this meditation. And he said, no, just stop. And she kept going to every little spiritual teaching or posture or pose or mental trick that she'd been given, and he would say at each one, no, just stop, just be. And she had no comprehension of what that would be like. And yet it is the teaching. It is the only way to get what we say we want eventually.
Right.
Which is a level of experience and understanding that surpasses what our language and our conscious logical mind can offer.
I was thinking this morning about, after reading the lesson, and just thinking about how every person that I meet is like another myself. You know, we're all one. And so that every time I have a disagreement with someone, I'm disagreeing with myself. And how ridiculous that is when you really look at it, which is why I totally understand. This was another thing I just read in a prior chapter in Byron Katie's book about always joining with your adversary, no matter what they say or what they think about you. She always finds a way to join. And which, you know, on one level you think, oh, well, that's ridiculous. If someone is accusing you of something that you know you haven't done, why would you agree with them. But then when I was looking at it this morning from the standpoint, well, that's just another me out there. Like, to disagree, not to join, is to keep the separation going, the lie that we're separate going.
That's right. And there's a line from scripture that's been quoted in various ways. Don't oppose what opposes you. You know, resist not evil. And Guy Finley talks about it as do not oppose what opposes you. Because you're, you know, in the resistance, you're pushing back against that which. So you're offering resistance to resistance, and what you're getting is the same, more and more of the same. It's more evidence of the separation.
Right, because it's a part of you that you haven't really recognized within yourself yet or accepted within yourself. So you're just continuing to push it away by not joining with them. And I think it was Jesus that said,
resist not evil.
It was another, agree with thine adversary. I think that's from, I'm not a Bible reader, but I think, I don't know if that was him or it was somewhere in the Bible, agree with thine adversary. And I never really understood what that meant, but it's becoming more understandable to me because it just seems so ridiculous to be having a disagreement with yourself, but yet that's what we're always doing without recognizing it.
Well, and it feeds the belief in the separation.
Exactly.
So, is there anything else we can support you with today?
No, that was it. Thank you very much. I appreciate your insight.
You mean the fact that I said I have no answer to your question?
Well, you pointed out that it was a distraction. I was creating a distraction for myself, and I hadn't seen that, so that was valuable.
All right. Well, thank you
so
for the call.
Thank you, another myself.
You're very welcome and deserving. And here's area code 520. You're in the air. Who do we have?
Audrey.
Welcome, Audrey. How are you today?
I'm doing better.
Well, glad to hear it. How can we support you today? Or what is your comment for us?
Well, I wanted to share an experience. On Saturday, my girlfriend asked me to go with her because she wanted to check on another girlfriend. And she drove, got out of the car. I was in the car alone with our two dogs, and I heard, now I'm not schizophrenic, but I did hear a voice, and the voice said, she's dead. Now, I'm talking in the 3D dimension realm, 3D, she's dead. I heard it as clear as anything. My girlfriend, minutes later, she came out of the house, and she was all upset, and she said, she's dead. And the body was decomposing, and then, of course, the authorities came. Now, my conscious, logical mind would like to figure it out. But then I go, if everything is consciousness and awareness, but there is nothing but life, and life is eternal, and there is only consciousness, there is only awareness. And there goes the ego trying to figure it out. And it's simply an experience in this 3D dimension. I mean, what more can I do is say, came in my awareness, and somehow or another, I heard the words, she's dead. And it was as clear as if somebody was talking to me. And I'm trying to make sense out of it and saying, okay, I have gratitude for the experience. I mean, should I just say it is an experience?
Well, I don't know what you should do, but I hear you're saying that so far you've tried to just choose looking at it as an experience and accept it.
Right. And then there's a conflict of mind to say, oh, well, I should. And that's the ego mind, the conscious, logical mind trying to figure out an experience. It cannot be figured out. It just is.
Yeah, well, you know, Michael Rice might say something like, if you think you're just a body, this doesn't make any sense at all. But when you understand that you're a consciousness that's aware of energy systems within energy systems within energy systems, then it makes perfect sense. But not at a level that the conscious logical mind can plan or rehearse or manipulate for its benefit.
So just accept that we're an energy system. We are all connected. It is all awareness, and there was a tapped in, tuned in, and there was a connection.
Am I on target? It sounds like it. Well, it sounds like
you
are.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And you have supported me, and blessings.
Blessings. I'm glad to hear you're doing better, and we'll look forward to our next touch point.
Thank you.
So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. We've got about 3 minutes left, or a little less than that, before we start our second hour. I believe Jeannie will be here, and Michael and Jeannie will do their best to support you in this work and your questions. And I'll just say for Jeannie's benefit that area code 813 was, the hand went up, but then when I went to check on them, they clearly weren't, what would say, paying attention to my requests for checking in with them. So they might still have something to share. And we've already talked to Ellen and Audrey. And we're just about ready to start the second hour of our show. So we thank you all for being here. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Wright.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Good conversation.
Have a lovely show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Monday, April the 5th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in, and I'll go ahead and turn on area code 813. You're on the air. Who do we have? Area code 813. Hello? Well, maybe they'll check back in. So while we're waiting on Michael, I'll direct you to our website. Oh, well, Michael just popped in. Welcome. Not hearing you if your microphone is maybe still muted.
Excuse me, mute challenge.
There you are.
Mute challenge, but I'm here. And welcome, everybody. Honored, delighted that you're here. As we move forward once again, and keep advancing in the understanding of this amazing and powerful tool called forgiveness. Feeling very blessed that, one, that we have this technology, and two, that we get to share it with you. And sharing it, we get to move to deeper and deeper and deeper levels of comprehending exactly what this process of living a human life really means. And the core of living a human life means that we recognize that we are quite literally, as Dr. Tim always says, everything else is false, made of the energy called love. And if we've forgotten that, if we've fallen asleep, then there's a whole series of tools that we're here to present and to support understanding so that people can rediscover the truth of living as a human being and truly bringing forward the experience and bringing forward from the experience of being love a world that literally runs on that energy. We have been reading from Why Is This Happening to Me Again, and we are on chapter 9, I believe it is. Are we on 9? Yeah, Blockage of Truth. So anyone who's following along with us, we're in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, and we're heading to page 52. If you don't have a copy of the book, you are certainly welcome to go to our website and download a free copy. Or, and because the book is out of print, we fortunately, back in the early part of the century, it's kind of strange to say that, but we spread multiple tens of thousands of copies around the globe. And so you can usually pretty much find a used copy of the book on Amazon or on eBay pretty cheaply and follow along with us, and not even necessarily buy it. Just go to the website and you'll find it there in, I don't know, 8 or 9 different languages, and we'd be delighted to have you read along with us. I'm realizing after, of course, having written the book a couple of decades plus ago and rereading it for the first time in a long time, realizing just how profoundly impactful the material in the book is. It's so instructive as to how we function as human beings. We've been talking about the idea of blame up to this point, and that the natural result of living in a lie is that our minds do not have the capacity to show us or to hold the truth, and therefore by calling our lies the truth, by the willingness to believe that, you know, that you're the problem in my life, the only reason I'm in pain is because of what you did. Interesting thesis. I've got an energy moving inside of me because of something you did. Well, actually, that's kind of true. I may well have an energy moving in me because of what you did. On the surface, yes, you did something that resonated that energy, but that energy had to be in me in order to move. And so to say you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me afraid is one of the biggest lies in the creation. So we're on the top of page 52 and conversation with a character named Richard. Since most people blame others for what happens to them, they quote-unquote forgive by letting other persons off the hook. And of course, we've got a big pair of quotes. Well, they're regular size quotes, but they could be a big pair of quotes around the word forgive, because it's another lie of the culture to think that forgiveness is about how I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. If I don't like what's happening inside of me, there is a tool that was delivered in the first century by a man named Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and it was delivered in the Aramaic language. And it was a tool for removing things like hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, and trauma from the human system It was not a tool, as the Greeks have told us, for letting other people off the hook, because that's happening inside of us. The natural result of believing that forgiveness is about letting somebody else off the hook, or pardon me, the natural result of blocks to truth is believing that forgiveness is letting somebody else off the hook. But it's not at all. And so Richard, the character that I'm talking with in the book, says, what if I need to be forgiven for something I've done? We've been taught an error about forgiveness, Richard. The act you're asking about is called pardoning. If you feel you have made an error and wish to be excused for your error, you have need of pardon, not forgiveness. Until we learn the true meaning of forgiveness, we substitute pardoning and think that forgiveness has occurred. The act of pardoning does nothing to change the internal reality structure of the person doing the pardoning. It leaves the painful internal reality in the mind, leaves it in place, ready to be triggered again. And so someone who never learns to go in and remove the root of their pain, because we are energetic beings, and when pain is moving at us, because motion creates energy fields, we are literally setting up energy fields inviting someone to come in and do it to us again. So this act of pardoning does not change what's happening inside of us. So that painful internal reality is there, ready to be triggered again. It also means that the person who is pardoning, we usually try to control those he or she pardons so they will not trigger their pain again. When people, quote unquote, forgive each other using the misunderstood form of forgiveness, they let each other off the hook. Then each mind still has its invisible blockages and painful realities. The only way that what has been blocked in the mind becomes visible is as pain and upset projecting that mind's image of others. And so that's kind of the core of the understanding we want to come to. And once that's understood, then it becomes natural to move to the next level of recognizing that forgiveness is a tool for literally deleting, for removing any kind of painful reality, any kind of energy at the root of my pain that my mind can generate, and therefore becoming free of that pain. One of the things to understand about this game of blocks of truth is that when I do block the truth out and someone comes along that triggers my pain, I will literally create a perceptual construct of them that is built out of my pain. And I will swear that my thesis that they're the cause of my pain must be true, because my mind literally shows me a picture that looks like an outward snapshot, but is really just an outpicturing of my internal process. And so the technology of forgiveness is the core of this work. And I've spent many decades, about a little better than four now, developing an understanding of this tool and delivering it to the world. If you have not accessed the tool as yet, you can go to our website, whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner of the page, you'll see the words, Start Here. If you click that Start Here link, it will begin to walk you through a whole tutorial on the forgiveness process, right up to including audios and videos of exactly how the process works, a worksheet process, which you can do right there on the phone, and or you can print the worksheets off. There are a variety of worksheets we've developed specifically for forgiveness. There are other worksheets as well, but a variety of different worksheets specifically focused on the forgiveness process. You can download them and print them And of course, as you engage with them, if questions come up, the reason we're here 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, and thank you, Dr. Tim, for taking that first hour on and making it available to people and creating such an awesome support. And then the second hour is so that if you have questions, if you have things that don't make sense or you need support in using the process, we're here to answer those questions and to support you. There's also one other mechanism through which you can access the forgiveness process, and that is you can go to your app store on your phone, whether you've got an iPhone or an Android, and simply type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. When you do that, you'll be looking at the world's first forgiveness app. Download the app, two different versions of the worksheet in it. It's a very private app that only asks for one permission, and that's to use the internet in order for you to use it. And you're doing forgiveness right there on your phone. And or you've got a child's game called the Dragon Klingon game with which you can support kids learning forgiveness. So there are lots of ways to access the technology, and we're here to give as much support as we possibly can. And we're here to give it away free. We're, you know, everything we know about the process is there on the website in some way, shape, or form. And you're most welcome to access it as freely as possible. If you do access it or through this show you find support, of course, we would be delighted if you'd consider supporting us. You know, when we, you'll notice as we do this workshop, or pardon me, this radio show, that there are no ads on Dr. Tim's section or my own. We pay to do this show. We don't get paid to do it. And, of course, when we complete the show, very shortly afterward, I'm not even sure exactly within how many minutes, you can go to our website. Just go to whyagain.org. And if you look down the page, you'll see a microphone. Click on that microphone, drill down to the date, and you can download an MP3. In fact, you can download any one of probably, I'm not even sure how many are there now, well over 3,000 MP3s from the last 10 years of doing this show 5 days a week. So we're going to do and continue to do everything we can to support you. If it's appropriate for you to support us in return, that would be awesome. You can go to our website, and there's a donate button there, and you're welcome to do that. We'd be honored and delighted to receive any support you have to give. In the meantime, Miss Jeannie, we've got about 50 minutes left, so do we have anything happening in the chat room or anybody in the phone queue, with a hand up?
No, but I did get, and I'm just looking for it, I got an email the other day with a question from a young lady in Kenya, and I printed it off so I could read it today.
Awesome.
Find out. Give me just a minute. But nobody has a
hand. And maybe, sweetie, and maybe we can read it in sections and just comment piece by piece as we go through it. I know you shared a little bit of that with me the other day. And
okay.
So I'd be fabulous here with you to say.
Okay.
Maybe you can.
So she says, huh?
Go ahead.
She says, hi, Jeannie. I hope that you and Michael are doing great. I don't know if you remember my email below from last May. And we actually, she had emailed us and we addressed it on the radio show. Where I shared anxiety
right.
about the Revelation prophecy and the possible end game, a world that will require us to jump some hoops before we can do business and send our kids back to school or rejoin society. Michael gave me some very good insights on how prophecy is a warning of what is in the pipeline, a call to deliberately change our energies in order to avert it. I tried this, and it helped me a lot in terms of my peace, and external things also seem to be going better. Okay, baby.
Sounds like Aria has a question for you.
She wanted me to open a box.
Sweet voice.
It helped me a lot in terms of my peace, and external things also seem to go back to normal here with COVID numbers declining, businesses and schools reopening. Then the vaccine landed on their shores, and immediately after that, the numbers started rising again, and now my country is in lockdown. I can cope with this as I did before, but what is giving me the chills is the news about the vaccine passport. Started in Israel, has arrived in New York, is being discussed in Europe and who knows where else. It's being hailed as the way that people can safely return to normal again.
Yeah, so let's reinforce one of the basic principles of this work, and that is our definition of the word denial. And the word deny in the context of this work is a word that describes the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of me is a cause of something that's moving inside of me. When I live out of this denial thought form or language, what happens is, in order to literally build an image of a world that conforms to my belief that something outside of me is the problem, I have to generate a false picture of the world. And so, you know, in the ancient Aramaic, they talked about that false picture as being appearance. And so I have to create an image, an appearance of things being the way I believe they are in my denial. So when I say there is, whatever the word was used to describe the upset, when I say the upset is caused by this vaccine passport or what's happening with COVID, I just entered into a state where I said to my mind, I think the word was chills, mind, I have chills inside of me, whatever that means, but I'm not interested in anything that would show me that those chills, disturbances belong to me. So I want you to build me a world of appearances that tell me that the reason my structure is going through this quote-unquote chill energy is because of what's happening out there. And my mind will build me that picture. My invitation would be that this is the first place I would invite you to start breaking down the lies your mind tells you. If you have chills, and, you know, I presume that word chill means fear, trepidation, disturbance, upset, whatever exactly it means for you. But the first place to start to break it down is to let go of the denial. You're not experiencing whatever that energy is because of what's happening in the world. You're experiencing whatever that energy is because that's what's structured in your mind. And when you realize that, that's the first place to start to apply forgiveness. Now, I certainly can see, and I think it's another one of those black psyops political footballs that can make anything out of anything. And, of course, there are all these dire predictions about what this means, what that means, and on and on and on goes the list. But those predictions aren't the cause of my quote-unquote chilled mind. Those predictions are a trigger for the opportunity for me to forgive that part of my mind that holds that fear, sadness, grief, whatever it happens to be. So that would be the first place I would offer to begin the forgiveness process, to recognize that you can experience what's going on with COVID, schools, governments, old closings, passports, no passports. You can experience that world free of what you describe as chills by forgiving as to those chills, again, whatever that means to you, and not, and to put an end to projecting that energetic, the root of that energetic pattern into your mind's perception. And as you do, then you will stand with a mind more connected to love, more connected to peace. And a mind connected to love is the most intelligent mind you can possibly have. So you'll have a more constructive, intelligent, and capable approach and ability to handle whatever you need to handle in whatever the circumstance is, school or home or passports or not. If you remain connected to love, if the scuttlebutt, if the conversations, and there are lots of fear-based conversations around this whole passport thing, and I'm not saying there isn't justification for it, this could lead to some problems. What I am saying is, if I appear to be in fear about it, I'm in denial, and it's another opportunity for me to learn to forgive my fear. So I'd be starting to do worksheets right there, right off the bat would be my starting point. And beyond that, Jeannie, let's hear the rest of what she has to say.
Well, I think you've already addressed it, but she goes on to say, it's frightening to think of a world where it looks like those who prefer not to get a vaccine and focus instead on naturally building their immunity against the virus will be classified as a threat to society and shut out of theaters, restaurants, and gyms. I am also stunned that, and so she's talked about something else frightening her, and now she's talking about something else stunning her.
Right.
I'm also stunned that some people in my circle see no issue with the passport and even embrace it, thinking it's so cool. I can't help wondering what comes next. Will schools in certain residential areas, will the unvaccinated become paras and lepers? How do I raise my little girl in such a world? Then she says, I've done a worksheet. Oh, go ahead and address that first.
Well, my offering would be that what I would suggest is the possibility is that as you heal your fear, you can refrain from transferring or resonating that fear in your daughter, and you can raise her as a being that stays connected to her true essence, this active present love, and has a genius mind, the mind that is your and her birthright, active in her, that will always know the best path of activity for whatever's happening in the world. So that would be where I would go with that one, is to recognize who you are as love, primary objective of being a parent, and to continuously identify her as the presence of love so that she gets to literally incarnate in her physiology, totally and completely connected to the presence of love, rather than to the fears of the world or the fears of her generations or your generations. Now, when you say, I've done a worksheet, you know, that was the first line that she, the last line Jeannie got into there. It's like, if this is as big an issue as you're implying it is, and it sounds like it's a pretty big issue to you, I'd be suggesting that you be moving in the direction of dozens and perhaps hundreds of worksheets. I mean, this is really touching a deep place for you and in you, it sounds like, of fear and trepidation. And I would, for one, support you being a person who lives totally and completely free, of fear and trepidation of any kind. To get to the point where your mind, no matter what people are doing in the world, your mind is incapable of producing a fear-based reality. That would be my offering as the first order of business. Then, with a clear mind and a state of being connected to love, you'll be able to assess what's going on in the world with the most intelligent mind possible. You know, in the ancient scriptures, they talked about that mind of Christ in us. The mind of Christ is the mind of love. It's our birthright to live with the same mind that this man they called Christ lived with. And that was quite literally thinking out of the mind of love or the mind of the Creator. And when you approach your world from that mind of love, everything you look at is going to change. Everything, literally. Because as you stand in the space as the space of conscious, active, present love, you will be one person who resonates that presence of love everywhere that you look, in every interaction that you have, with every person that you meet. And as you do, you will become a space that inspires and resonates love everywhere you go. Your life's going to change when you do that. And that would be the practical application of the tools. Go ahead, Jean.
So she says, I've done a worksheet, and so far the commitment that came out I came up with was to seek first God's kingdom and all these things will be added unto me. I believe that means an alternative reality that has freedom, joy, prosperity beyond measure. And that's what I want for myself and my loved ones and indeed all of humanity. Any ideas or advice on how I can do this in a world that is looking very scary would be welcome.
Cool. Well, I hear loud and clear to your heart that the world is at a stage where it's bringing up your deepest levels of fear. And it's interesting how the world has been created, because if you are destroying your mind, your physiology with fear, then the world is meant to show you the deepest roots of that fear. And in so doing, you have the opportunity to forgive those energetic patterns. So it sounds like you're ready to do a whole new level of your work, and we're here to support you in doing that with any questions and answers that come up as we move forward. I might suggest that you download the app, and, you know, we did some interaction last year, and you spoke about the shifts that you got. It might be time to do a new level, you know, rather than kind of hanging out on your own and using the tools. It might be time to do a new level of your work. And we're actually just getting ready to release a new version of the Codependence to Interdependence Communication Practicum Intensive. It was a 14-week intensive that we did. Well, we actually started doing it about 6 months ago. Went through 14 weeks, and we created 50-some hours of video. And we're now in the process of doing the second round of that intensive, where we're creating another 28 or so hours of video. And so we're going to release that as an independent intensive. It includes the personal code evaluation, one that you take at the beginning of the intensive and one that you take after. And the personal code evaluation gives you insight as to where the weaknesses are in your mind and perceptual system and your life, and some specific tools for healing those aspects of self. At the end of the intensive, you get to do the evaluation again, and there's a two-hour video that explains that evaluation, how to use it. And then in between, I think Jenny had totaled up what we have, and I believe the intensive will include about 83 hours of live video for self-study. And the cost of the intensive, including everything, and of course we have the radio show here 5 days a week for ongoing support, the cost for that whole intensive is going to be $600. And the next time that we initiate another live intensive, we'll actually add approximately another 28 hours of video live, and you'll be able to upgrade to that live intensive. And the live intensive, including all of the video work, plus the ongoing support over the 14 weeks, is $1,200. And so you can do the initial video or course on your own now, and do it at your own pace, and give us, you know, either call in or send us questions as you've done here. And then the next time that we do that video live, you can upgrade to that and just pay the difference between the live program. And that will include, as I said, the 83 hours that Jeannie had calculated we have, plus an additional approximately 28 hours of live video that we'll do in the next round of the intensive. So it might be time to take yourself into the next level of doing your work and start to work with that. And once you register, the video links are yours permanently. You can review the workshop as often as you like, and they're there for you to use. And, of course, the radio show's here to support you. And if you decide, let's say 6 months from now, we decide to do that 14-week intensive again live, then you'll have access, if you choose to upgrade, to the 2 hours per week for 14 weeks of live interaction, question and answers, and process work. And once you've upgraded to that workshop status, if you do, then at any point in the future when we do the intensive again, you will not only have access at that point, it'll go from 83 to about 110 hours of video that you can use continuously. And all future intensives, you'll be a guest in, so that there's live ongoing support. We're, you know, calling it a rolling intensive that you'll be welcome to be in forever when we do that particular intensive. So it might be time to take your work to the next level by jumping in and making a purchase of that 83 hours of video work, the worksheets, all the materials are there. We have a food program, which was created by an awesome young lady named Yurate, that mentors you in what's needed to create a total fresh and raw food program, or at whatever level you're ready to move to integrate more fresh and raw food into your life. There are menus, there are videos that she's created. She's just done an awesome job. Shopping list, 14 weeks of 3 meals a day. There are menus, and I mean, she's just done an awesome job of it. So I suggest you might want to take a look at that, and you can begin that pretty much immediately if you'd like to take your work to the next level. So there are my thoughts, and Miss Jeannie, where do we go from here?
Well, that's the end of her letter, and we still have no hands up and no questions in the chat room. So,
well, we've still got about a half an hour to interact and carry forward that conversation. So if you're out there in listener land, how can we support you? What's on your mind? Where are you at in your process work? If you're involved in the intensive that we're currently doing, how is that intensive going for you? Are you coming across any additional questions, refinements that are needed in any of the worksheets? You know, the codependence to interdependence intensive, we do several different workshops. We do Why Is This Happening to Me Again, that's focused in the forgiveness process and the reality management worksheet. We do the Healing Through Relationships workshop, and there is a worksheet that comes with the Healing Through Relationships and a specific tool called My Commitment as part of that workshop. Then we're going to move into communication. Did you hear what I think I said? And codependence to interdependence, each with their own instructions and tools. So all of that is part of that 14-week intensive that we're in the process of doing and getting ready to package and make available as a separate self-study course. So we're here to support you if you want to take advantage of any of that and move it forward. And if there are any refinements needed as you're using those tools, you know, if you've been using the codependence to interdependence intensive worksheet, that specific codependence, we had created an extra session on Sunday afternoon, and I had announced it kind of spontaneously at the end of last Wednesday's class, because I have been working on it, had created a new PowerPerson worksheet, and it took me a little longer to present it than I thought it was going to, so we created an extra class for Sunday. And when I did that, I kind of did it just last Wednesday evening spontaneously and wasn't thinking about the fact that this was Easter Sunday coming up. And so we, you know, the fact that, you know, Easter was going on for most people, we decided to put that on hold. So we're going to cover the second half of the new PowerPerson worksheet on Wednesday evening. And then together we'll determine a time where we're going to add in an extra bonus class. Of course, that extra bonus class will become part of the course for future participants. And so we'll be rolling forward with those tools. And if you're out there in listener land and you're using any of those tools in the intensive, what's on your mind? How can we support you? I know we've had several people who did the first intensive who are participating, you know, having done the first codependence to interdependence communication practical intensive online, we didn't know when we did that that we were going to be inviting people to do it again and again and again and again any time that we do it live. And so if you're out there in listener land and you were in that first intensive, I know several people have called in and spoken about how impactful it's been to go through the course the second time. And I promise that those who decide to watch those videos third, fourth, fifth, or tenth time, each time there'll be whole new pieces of the puzzle, whole new depths of understanding. Now, if you've been listening to the show since the beginning of the year, I've been reading from the book, and you'll notice that I can easily spend 15 or 20 minutes on just a paragraph or two from the book as I recognize new levels of insight that, you know, things that I would have been writing in the book back when I wrote the book originally if I'd known them, but brain cells that I've built and things that I've learned since then. And I'm really realizing on a whole new level the importance of having the brain cells to recognize what's happening. You know, if I develop a new device that looks like nothing you've ever seen before, and I put it in front of you and I say, what is this? You're going to look at it and go, I don't know. I don't have any brain cells for that. But as I begin to teach you about that device, you develop the brain cells and you see the utility of it. But let's say the device has 10 different aspects of use, and I teach you or give you the brain cells for one aspect of it. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 are not going to be available to you unless you have the brain cells to recognize it. And what I'm really appreciating on a whole new level, especially as we're going through this intensive a second time, is just having the brain cells to recognize what's happening in the subtle aspects of this work is such an important piece of living life truly as a human being, truly as the presence of love. You know, we live in a world that has this excuse language that they use, especially when they flub it, when they do something that's off base, and they'll say, well, after all, I'm only human. It's like, no, excuse me, that's not true. Let's establish the truth. A human being is the conscious, active presence of love. You're never only just a human. If you have discovered and are living out of your human life, then you know that you are this awesome, active presence of love. And when you do something untoward, really needs to be saying in those circumstances is, well, that's my non-human self. That's the part of me that is disconnected from and functions without the presence of love. You know, the atrocities of the world, we've heard it said, well, you know, those human atrocities. No, they're not. Every atrocity that's ever been committed is non-human. There is no human life. There is not the presence of active love in those behaviors that we say are non-human or inhumane. And so we're looking to educate. The same way that we're working to educate people that forgiveness is a tool for going inside of your mind and removing what never belonged, we're here to educate you that human means that you live in and as the active presence of love. Those who have lost contact, those who've gotten lost in a mind based in hostility or fear, are not human. They have what looks like a human form. Yes, I agree. But strictly speaking, until one is functioning out of and as love, there is not the expression of human life. Quite literally, is non-human. And what we are looking to do is to restore the direct experience of conscious, active, present love literally to every mind, heart, and being on the earth. That's why we're here with these tools. That's why we've traveled the globe far and wide. You know, up until 2 years ago, Jeannie and I would complete an intensive at Heartland, usually late August, early September. Get in our van and get on the road. And we wouldn't get back home until the following June, sometimes July, for the next round of intensives. And all that time that we were on the road, we would go wherever on the face of the earth we were invited. We would pay our own expenses, and our workshops were free. Well, that's kind of changed now. You know, Jeannie's dad got to the point where he couldn't live on his own, and we were not willing to see him put in a nursing home. So we decided to move here to Bristol, Virginia. Jeannie's dad had been in his home for 50 years and wasn't about to leave, so we moved in with him to make sure he was taken care of and could, stay in his home. And at about the same time that happened, we had this delightful creature, Ari Rain, who entered our world as a granddaughter. And, you know, at pretty much at least 3 days a week, we get to be with and take care of Ari Rain, which is just, you know, we have this awesome set of bookends, Jeannie's dad at 88 and Ari Rain at 29 months. And we are so blessed. And Jeannie tells us that we've got a hand up. So let's say hello to our caller. We've got about 18 minutes.
We actually have two hands. The first one is 610.
Great.
I believe this is Miss Susan. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, both of you.
Hey, welcome, young lady.
Happy
belated Easter.
Questions. Okay.
Great.
Let's
go for it.
Price. Well, I feel very dull today. I had a big dish of ice cream yesterday, and it's one of my 50 favorite things. I'm trying to find 50 favorite things. And I realize some of those favorite things are not going to be healthy for us. So anyway, that's a whole other category of discussion. But,
we have found a sugar-free, I believe it's stevia sweetened. It may have some other natural sweeteners in it, but totally sugar-free ice cream that we found two flavors so far that we really enjoy called, that one's vanilla, one's butter pecan, depending what part of the country you're from. And they're totally, completely sugar-free. They taste awesome, creamy, really excellent, and no dairy, no sugar, pretty decent ingredients. So, you know, you can enjoy that and not have to feel like you've cheated on yourself.
Right. Yeah.
Or
nice
get that hangover from cow pus or whatever. And sugar.
I know. Between the sugar and the cow pus, Michael, I mean, really, you've sort of ruined ice cream from us. Whenever Tim pours milk on his blueberries, he says, I'm having some cow pus.
Well, you know, there's another creamer out there that we get. We actually buy it on Amazon. There's a non-dairy creamer called Nut Pods that are better than any milk I've ever tasted. And we actually, we have a store nearby that makes a pretty nice natural apple pie. It does have some sugar in it, but not a whole lot. It's mostly just real apples. And we pour this Nut Pods French vanilla cream on this apple pie. That reminds me, we do have one up in the freezer that we need to pull out for tonight for dessert. So, you know, that you can do that without having to compromise. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that we live in a world where we're the only creature that eats from the teat of another animal. I mean, there is an animal that after maturity eats from the breast of its own breed, let alone from the breast of a different breed. It's kind of interesting how we've been, you know, cajoled into that. But anyway, there are some great alternatives today, fortunately.
Nut, spell the pause,
Nut
Pod,
N-U-T, N-U-T, two words, N-U-T-P-O-D-S, Nut Pods.
Okay, good. Good to know.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Well,
and it is.
This power person worksheet is so beyond.
Is it stirring things for you?
Absolutely, and I've even not done worksheets for 2 days because I spend my morning thing doing this. But it's tempting to get discouraged because what I realize is practically my whole way of presenting myself is learned from my power people, whether they were acting power people or not. But I wonder,
what an inspiring thing to learn.
Oh, God,
how awesome is that to realize that perhaps most of my life has been run from the unconsciousness of my past generations, and now I get to wake up from that and function fully as the presence of love as a human being. How awesome is that? Of course, I could take that with my thoughts in different directions, but...
I know, one could.
That would probably just be replicating something my power person would do instead of functioning as a conscious human being.
Yeah, well, I was wondering, you know, what are all the options here? Not that everything was bad, and I don't need to take that anywhere right now, but I do have a specific question. They say that Jesus appeared to those who loved him. And I'm thinking, well, you know, Jesus isn't in the flesh right now. And so those who loved him then and those of us who are trying to learn to love him now, I wouldn't say I love him. I would say I admire him, honor him, look up to him, use him as my mentor and my model. And I have very rich thoughts of appreciation for him, but to love him, I don't know if I do. I don't know if I do.
Well,
or
my offering is it's not even possible to love him. It's not possible to love yourself. It's not possible to love your children or your parents or your neighbors or anybody else. That's all a great fraud. You know, either love is a verb or it's a noun. If it's a verb, then we can do it. But if it's not a verb, and, you know, you, of course, have been through the drill with the question of hold a newborn, tap into the essence of the newborn, and, you know, everybody basically describes the essence of the newborn using some word that reflects the presence of love, and then ask yourself the question, is the newborn loving me, or is the newborn love? If the newborn is love, then it's a reflection of the fact, that I too am love. And so if I'm going to instruct my mind properly to produce a result, and basically the mind is a goal-oriented machine, then I'm going to have to use accurate definitions of the words that I'm using in order to get my mind to produce the result. So I would not suggest that you even put the least bit of effort into loving yourself or your neighbor or your husband or your kids or Yeshua, but rather to put the effort into uncovering any form of hostility or fear that gets in the way of you experiencing yourself as the presence of love and being that presence when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor, children, self, or anyone else. Then you've arrived at a whole new place.
Okay. All right. Now, I have another question. It's a quick one, I think. Jesus, when he was on the cross saying, Eloi, Eloi, he was quoting Psalm 22, I think was written in the original, it was Hebrew originally, and he's quoting it, but quoting it in Aramaic. I wonder how that all fits in with your Aramaic new understanding, because certainly in Psalm 22, whoever wrote it sounded as if he felt abandoned by God. Now, here's Jesus saying it on the cross, and there is another meaning of, wow, so this is what it was all about.
Well,
can you say something
about
that?
My offering would be that I would suspect that Yeshua repeating it from there, first of all, I wouldn't agree that it was originally written in Hebrew. It was originally thought, spoken, and written in Aramaic. The first time it was expressed, and then when Yeshua rededicated those words, and I would offer, you know, my understanding would be that the meaning has not changed from the first time it was expressed in the scriptures to when Yeshua used it, and it was a rediscovery of who I am and what my purpose is, and a deep appreciation for, you know, to put it in the context of our conversation, what you had just said about, you know, living out of your power person dynamics. The moment that you really grok that, you familiar with the word grok?
No, I know you've mentioned it. I don't remember what you said.
Yeah. Well, the word grok comes from a book called Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein. And it's about a guy who's born on Mars, and he comes to Earth. And, of course, he doesn't have the brain cells for Earthlings. I mean, talk about culture shock. You know, it's a different world altogether.
Right.
And so each time this character comes across something he does not understand through the brain cells of his Mars upbringing, he withdraws inside of himself, and he totally energetically digests the experience that he's now having, which is nothing like anything he ever experienced on Mars. So in the context of the conversation that you brought this up, I would offer that as you move along, you're doing the power person worksheet, and all of a sudden it occurs to you that, oh my God, I've been just living out of these past dynamics, replicating these power person dynamics, and Eli, Lama Sabachthani, I was meant for this presence of love, for this expression of my original being, not to live out of my power person dynamics. You could very easily use that phrase in exactly the context Yeshua used it, exactly the context of that early scripture writer. It's like, oh, this is about something totally different than what I thought. And now I'm awakening to that which is totally different, and I get to live a whole different life that may not even resemble what I thought life was about. So I'd invite you to apply that understanding to yourself sitting, doing worksheet, and realizing how much of the past hostilities and fears and generational patterns it's time for you to throw away and to bring in a whole new expression of yourself as the presence of love, and realize that that's what you're here for. That's what we're all here for. So we could each use that phrase when we crucify the non-being self, when we dissolve, when we let loose of, when we shed the hostility and fear-based self and replace it with ourselves, the realization that, this is what we're here to do. It's not about that old generational dynamic, that old thing the world taught me. It's about being renewed in the presence of love at every instant of our lives. We can start living in a different world when we have that particular insight. And that, I believe, is an insight that is designed for each of us to replicate personally. This is what I'm here for. Got it. Does that leave you breathing?
Yeah, I've got to go back and read that psalm again, too. And anyway, I'm not prepared to have a further discussion. It would be more like an argument. And I hear you. I'd love to think it meant the other thing.
Yeah. So am I hearing you say that probably your power person dynamic would dictate that you argue and instead of try out a new piece of clothing here?
Possibly so, yes. It's just that the rest of the psalm is such a cry of anguish. What Jesus said was a short thing, but the rest of the psalm is...
Take a look at yourself doing that worksheet, and isn't it a cry of anguish? When you start looking at it, I've just been doing it. Isn't that really a cry of anguish? And then the moment where you go,
I could be doing something different. I could have had a Rachma instead. There's the recovery from the anguish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like a mini replica.
Yeah.
And how deeply do you suppose your generations felt trapped?
Yeah.
And replicated that construct in their minds.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the Power Person worksheet in our Codependence Intensive is designed to liberate us from that trap and open to a whole new meaning of what it is to be a human being and to incarnate, to embody as the active presence of love. You know, think about the first time you held that newborn little girl that is now the daughter you're so proud of. And the presence of love that she is, that she was when she was born, and that she's working to re-embody fully today.
Yeah. Right.
And if you observe her, did you watch her getting trapped in some of the generational dynamics and some of the games of the world as she walked away and bought into being separated from you? And is she doing the same process of undoing those patterns and returning to her roots as the presence of love? And doing it very gracefully. You've described several layers of the work she's been doing in doing that.
Yeah, she's been great. Thanks, Michael.
Honored and delighted, young lady. We are most appreciative of having you on our team and are delighted to be part of your team as well.
Thanks. I am too.
All right. Any other thoughts for you? We're down to about 3 minutes.
No. Go ahead and do that other person.
All right. Blessings.
Thanks.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Ms. Jeannie. I believe this is Miss Rona. You
Ms.
got
Rona,
on.
Hey there.
Aha, it's I.
Aloha.
Aloha, aloha. We're only 3 minutes. Let me just say that let us
Go
not
for
forget that Jesus' body was literally dying. So any sound that would have uttered, that would have come out of his mouth, might have sounded like anguish. But that may have been the moment when he passed from reality to actuality.
Mm-hmm. I'd go with you on that.
Okay, and I need the main brand of the ice cream with stevia.
Oh, it is...
There's two, Coconut Bliss and Soy Delicious.
Oh, yeah, what was the second one?
Soy Delicious.
Oh,
now,
oh,
they have
oh.
brands. They each have brand. Actually, Coconut Bliss does have some sugar in it. There are a couple of specific flavors that have no sugar in them at all in the Soy Delicious. And the two that we found so far are butter pecan and vanilla.
Okay, very good. Because I
Soy
find
Delicious.
Myself, I'm eating a lot of ice cream too, but it reminds me of the fact that when I first came into planet Earth in this lifetime, I was consuming a lot of dairy, if you would, you know, and now I was breastfed. So
yeah, these are both based in coconut milk, so pretty healthy.
Yeah, coconut grows right around my neighborhood.
There you go. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Actually,
you
could probably make your own with the local coconuts. So, you know, I would suspect that it might be a fairly easy thing to do with the easy access to fresh raw coconut that you've got.
One more thing I want to say before the time is up is that I had, oh my goodness, you know how there's an archetypal Christmas and an archetypal Easter energy?
Mm-hmm.
There are. I mean, I don't know whether you're aware of it or not, but
so
I have experienced
it. It's definitely the time for awakening.
Yes, and I have never experienced such an amazing Easter morning as I did yesterday. Oh my God.
Sweet.
And I'm not a traditional Christian. I was raised in an agnostic family environment. And my relationship with my sister which for the last 30 years.
We're down to about 20 seconds.
It was horrifically combative. I had a, she called me. We spoke for an hour and a half
on
Saturday.
Nice to let all that go. Okay.
Not one single moment of that.
Have a blessed one. All right. Bye-bye.